So you do the advance for that. Hello, everyone. I'm Chuck Benbrook. I live in Northeast Oregon. Thanks to the Union of Concerned Scientists for organizing this session and making it possible for me to come down and share this with you, if we can get it to work. What do you think, Karen? It's coming. Okay. I'm the chief scientist for the Organic Center. This is a small nonprofit that carries out research on the consumer health and environmental benefits of organic food and farming. It's interesting to note that starting in about 1998 or 1999 in the UK and throughout much of Europe, the debate over genetic engineering of agronomic crops evolved into a comparison of pathways of change for the food system between proponents of genetic engineering and those that were advocating more effort and attention and investment in organic farming. That basic juxtaposition of GE agriculture or biotechnology and organic is been going on for 10 years now in Europe, and I am getting the feeling that it's about to start here in this country. I've been a veteran of the long-standing debates over GE agriculture here in the U.S. for a good 10 years, and I suspected the issue to kind of fade away, but it seems to be coming on strong again, and I do think that we're going to spend a lot more time, and I think fruitfully so, comparing the what genetic engineering has to offer in producing more nutritious food and addressing some of agriculture's environmental problems versus organic farming. I'm going to blast through a lot of information in a short amount of time. We've got a series of reports on our website that go into things in a great deal of detail. Well, clearly organic farming as is currently practiced in the U.S. eliminates or largely eliminates three of the big food safety problems: pesticides in food, animal drugs and hormones, and resistance to antibiotics, and GE food risks to whatever extent they end up being proven to be novel allergens, et cetera. And organic production systems can also actually help a great deal in reducing the frequency and problems with mycotoxins in food and also bacterial contamination. There's been more work in the U.S. on the environmental impacts and benefits of organic farming than the nutritional and food quality and food safety impacts. We know for certain that long-term organic management builds soil quality, sequesters more carbon in the soil, it promotes both above and below ground biodiversity and reduces energy inputs, particularly in a crop like corn that relies so much on nitrogen fertilizers that are made with natural gas. One of the biggest benefits of organic farming is if it were adopted widely up the Mississippi River and on up north in the country in the Corn Belt, there would definitely be a rather rapid shrinking in the dead zone. This is a perfect example of an enormous complex problem that we've been wringing our hands over for 15 years, where the solution or one of the solutions has been well known for almost as long, and yet nothing changes. One of the big drivers I think ultimately for behind organic food is that it often tastes better, particularly vine-ripe picked organic food that's consumed without too distance of a food chain. We did this report, and there's an ample data set, especially for apples, showing better taste, sweetness, and improved storability. We carried out and released this report on the nutritional superiority of plant-based organic foods in March of this year. We did this report to answer two questions. First of all, does the science show that organic farming increases or decreases or leaves unchanged the nutrient content or nutrient density in organic foods? And second, to the extent that organic farming systems do change the nutrient density, nutrient composition in foods, how big are those changes? I talked yesterday at the American Dietetic Association annual meeting, a very large crowd of nutritionists and dietitians, and we still read quotes in news stories about organic food from a variety of people coming out of the dietetics and nutrition community saying, well, there's just not enough science or the data is too conflicting. So we really don't know whether organic farming produces more nutritious food than conventional production systems. Anyone that's making that claim today is not up to date with the literature. There have been about 50 high-quality studies that have come out in the last 5 or 6 years that have fairly consistent findings, not universally consistent, as I'll explain a little bit later, but I think the evidence is pretty clear now that a well-managed organic system is going to produce a greater nutrient density for at least some of the major nutrients that we care about than conventional systems. Not only are we quite confident in reaching that judgment, we also have a pretty good understanding of why. What we did, we identified 97 published studies going back to 1980. We used a number of criteria to pick a set of matched pairs where there was an organic tomato field and a conventional tomato field, and we compared the nutrient density for the tomatoes from those two fields. To use the literature for a fair and unbiased analysis, it's actually quite complicated because of very different experimental designs over time, different numbers of measures and different studies. But the team that did the report with me, we tried to be as fair and unbiased as possible. And I assume others might do it a bit differently, but I think our methods were sound. We did an agronomic practices screen of all the studies based on cultivar production methods, location, soil type and topography, nutrient levels, and pest control and culture practices. And one thing I could say, if the varieties aren't the same, a comparison study really is not terribly useful because plant genetics plays such an important role. But the good news is that scientists are getting very good at designing and carrying out these comparative studies, and the quality has definitely gone up over time. We also screened all the studies for the quality of the analytical methods. You've got your organic tomato in your conventional tomato, but you want to measure the vitamin C and the polyphenols and the flavonoids and the antioxidants, the soluble solids, the pH, potassium, phosphorus, et cetera. Well, all of those measurements require various analytical methods, and we were surprised to find out how many papers that were accepted for publication, even in journals with a focus on analytical chemistry, in our judgment, failed our analytical methods screen. Some of our results, we found an adequate number of matched pairs for 11 different nutrients. In terms of the vitamins, there were 67 matched pairs with the levels of nutrients higher in the organic in 41 cases, and the conventional was higher in 26. The two minerals were phosphorus and potassium, a little bit closer mix, 34 to 29 in the case of minerals. The big differences and certainly the differences with the greatest implications for public health between organic and conventional food fall in the polyphenols and antioxidants arena, the flavonoids. There were 44 out of 59 matched pairs where the organic value was higher, with the conventional value higher in 13 cases. This is a very stable finding now across a number of reviews that have been done. This little chart just summarizes the number of matched pairs for the various classes of nutrients. And overall, in just under two-thirds of the cases, the organic levels were higher. And in the important area of polyphenols and antioxidants, they were higher in 75% of the cases. Just to quickly give you a sense of how much higher, for antioxidants, the average level in the organic sample was 88% higher, 72% for total phenolics, 87% for quercetin, and 55% for camphorol. Protein, however, is higher in the conventional samples. And if I had time, I would explain to you the new understanding that is emerging about the physiological response of plants to high nitrogen systems. When a plant has lots of nitrogen, it enhances the vegetative growth. It tends to produce larger fruit. But it also delays the production of ascorbic acid, the precursor to vitamin C, and also tends to dilute out the levels of other nutrients. Nitrates are also much higher in conventional samples, and that's a bad thing. You want to have a low level of nitrates in food. In general, there were relatively small differences in the cases where nutrient levels were higher in the conventional foods, as you can see in this chart. And the cases where nutrient levels were 20% or more higher were clearly dominated by the organic foods, with a substantial number being 20% or more higher. Since the completion of our report, there's been about 12 or 15 new studies. We're working on updating the database, and we're going to redo the analysis. We just spent a minute or two, since I'm almost out of time, talking about today at Washington State University. They have their BioAg Symposium. And the results of a piece of work by Preston Andrews and Neil Davies and some other folks there are being presented. This was a research that came out of some earlier work that we had done with them. They compared nutrient levels with three varieties of tomatoes with the same level of nitrogen in the systems, but different sources of nitrogen, as would be the case in comparing an organic and a conventional system, and then conventional and organic management. And as expected, there was a nutrient dilution as a result of the dilution effect in the high-yield conventional plants in the tomatoes. But there was no nutrient dilution in the case of the high-yield, large tomato plants and tomatoes grown under organic management. This led the team to hope that perhaps their rich organic soils and organic management can raise the yield level above which we're going to see a nutrient dilution as a result of what's called the dilution effect. We have a pretty good idea now, and it's a very active focus of research, particularly in Europe, but increasingly so in the U.S. Why is it that organic fruits and vegetables are more nutrient dense? Well, the dilution effect is clearly one major factor. There's differences in the patterns and the rate of growth. Plant defenses and response to stress are very different, as is the impacts of nitrogen levels and forms on sugar levels and metabolism in plants. One of the fun things I got to talk about yesterday in front of the American Dietetic Association is we came up with recognition or the idea that plants get a diabetes-like syndrome. And we've been bringing this up for a couple years now at scientific meetings, and it's a real lights turn on when you talk to people about the similarities between how a conventional crop, in a environment with excess nitrogen, the way that that crop deals with and utilizes that extra nitrogen triggers a number of physiological changes that have direct parallels in human diabetes. So that was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, I'm out of time, so I'll just stop right there, and thank you for your attention.